It's time for Skin in the Game, and we have your front row seat to the action with marketing expert John Simperman and sports business journalist Tim Oshai.
They're talking about a $1 billion renovation.
Which is incredible.
And that's
for a hockey arena in the South, too, right?
That includes hotels. That includes.
Skin in the Game brings you the fresh and fascinating business news in the world of sports, a multi-billion dollar industry that has an economic impact on all of us.
It starts with, you know, I got to get into becoming the ultimate Buffalo Bills fan. I got to make believe I am Bills Mafia.
This week, I sit down with collectibles expert Brandon Steiner, who talks about the true meaning of sports memorabilia.
I have a company that has a responsibility to make money, but my first and foremost purpose and goal here is, like, I need to make a lot of people upstate New York here feel good about leaving that stadium and knowing they have a piece.
Coming up next on Skin in the Game, right after this.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley has winter fun everyone can agree on. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Holiday Valley features mountain coaster rides, snow tubing, the Tamarack Club Spa, and of course, skiing and snowboarding. At Holiday Valley, you can just relax too. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm John Simperman with my co-host.
I am Tim Oshai.
Hey, Tim. Also, hey, we want to thank again Holiday Valley for being a presenting partner of Skin in the Game.
John, I hope everybody out there listening and watching joins us down at Holiday Valley. Come on down to Ellicottville. It's a great town, great resort year-round, but no time better than winter to check out Holiday Valley.
That's right. That's right. So, Tim, today, actually, I left you alone for an interview.
You did.
So, really excited. First of all, sorry.
Excited to leave me alone, are you?
Sorry I was not there to participate in the interview, but so thrilled with who you were able to bring in for the show today.
Yeah, I think, John, you were on a plane and our interviewee was available right at the same time, and that's when we can get him. So his name is a name you know and a lot of people out there are going to know. Brandon Steiner, who's an entrepreneur from New York City, well known for a lot of things, but there's two that jump to mind, and the conversation's going to really center on this. One, he's the founder of Collectibles Exchange. You know, think back years, he's a guy who essentially bought out the old Yankee Stadium and sold all the seats and a lot of other memorabilia.
Right.
He's done the same now with the Buffalo Bills Highmark Stadium. He didn't buy it, to be clear. I'm being a little playful with the words, but he's the guy in charge of essentially taking the stadium, pulling it apart, and selling the pieces as keepsakes, as memorabilia. And I can tell you, as a guy who's walked around some places with him now, as somebody who can, you know, walk into a stadium, walk into a collectibles store, look at an item and say, oh, we could do this.
Yeah, no, it's you know, he really and his company really invented, or I guess say legitimized, you know, sports collectibles and sports memorabilia. So it's an honor to have him join Skin in the Game, and can't wait to listen in on that interview. But speaking of football stadiums and memorabilia, we probably could not do a sports business show without talking about the big game over the last week. While we're still waiting on some of the TV ratings, I would suppose that just like every year, Tim, there'll be a new and another bar, another record on viewership. But I think I'd like to just talk a little bit about, you know, some of the business side, and especially what I saw was kind of, you know, the commercials and the commercialization of the game. And one thing that came to mind was, I'm not sure if you noticed, but the AI, artificial intelligence category, was probably the most dominant ad category I saw within the, you know, the 4-hour broadcast.
I'm ready to go buy a Claude subscription right now because I can keep thinking, right?
Right, right.
No surprise here, but it was striking to me just how prevalent the, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, the sports betting companies' advertisements were.
Right, right.
And maybe I was looking for them a little bit more.
Well, I don't think you have to look for them. Betting ads are everywhere.
And, you know, the Super Bowl, too, for me, is always a way of you know, kind of testing my pop culture IQ, like who's in.
Right.
Maybe not who's out,
right?
But who's in. We know Haley Steinfeld's in, but I kind of knew that one already. It seems the Backstreet Boys...
They come back every year.
Backstreet is back all the time. I can't even finish the joke. I love the Backstreet Boys. Backstreet's back. But yeah, I mean, they had a T-Mobile ad and there was a crypto ad.
Yeah. And just for our listeners, according to Variety magazine on the fan meter, the NFL's belief in superpower was the number one ranked ad. The Amazon Ring, which featured Find Your Dog. Anytime you can feature puppies and dogs and ads, is always
that
a
is
positive.
A Super Bowl tradition.
That
or
was,
horses.
That
horses.
That was number one. And then speaking of horses, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, integrating both the classic Clydesdale with the American Eagle, that came in the top five as well. So there was a big mix of spots, you know, and I think those three definitely hit some emotional chords.
I want to throw one at you, and I'm interested to see if it resonated. There was an ad, a very touching ad, elderly father, middle-aged daughter, sitting on the porch, and he's handing her the keys, and it makes you think he's handing over his car. He was handing over the keys to the farm.
Right.
And I would say, okay, so where is this going? He's handing over a farm, and then you learn it's a potato farm.
Right, right.
And you talk about a tug at the heartstrings ad, a generational, emotional ad. For Lay's potato chips.
And a little
I didn't
bit,
see it coming.
No, nor did I. A little bit of a kind of that Americana emotional vibe to it. Very well produced. You know, from everything I heard and everything I've read, it was also ranked pretty high. The last bit of news when it comes to this NFL-themed episode is the Seattle Seahawks. Congrats to the fans in the Pacific and our listeners in the Pacific Northwest are the world champions. I'm not sure if you're aware, but the team is also now for sale.
Want to buy it?
No,
actually, how much more money are they going to get now?
Well, you know, it's...
With a Super Bowl win.
You know, actually, probably not any more than they would have got with a Super Bowl loss.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think about.
Right now, the reports are about a $10 billion price tag on the team. That is higher than what Josh Harris purchased the Washington Commanders for, which I believe was $6.5 million. Just 3 years ago. So the value is increasing. But yeah, to your point, the timing probably couldn't be better to be going.
Yeah, it's
the
not a bad sales tag.
Well, we'll keep our eye on it. We'll keep our listeners and our viewers in the loop on where that evolves to. But why don't we get to your interview?
So yeah, you're a listener on this one. Yes. I hope I did a good job.
I think you did.
All right, so we are going to be back next on Skin in the Game with Brandon Steiner.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Whether it's a beginner's or Black Diamond Trail, Holiday Valley features skiing and terrain at every level. There's also a team of snow sports instructors available to sharpen your skills and build your confidence. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Brandon Steiner, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. You know, it's a little one. It's one, you know, I can't decide right now. Where's the snow? Is it cold? It's not that cold. It's kind of gray. And I'm like, I'm in Buffalo. Where are the chicken wings? Where's the beef on a wick? I'm feeling a little more like a Buffalo resident. It's like my 5th trip now here in a matter of months. Love the people. I don't know why, but I feel like a little bit of like Syracuse a little bit. I feel like there's a little room to breathe here. Like in New York, if you don't plan everything out and everything costs a fortune, and even though I could afford it, it drives me crazy. But I feel like I can get anywhere from point A to B, and there's always a very friendly, welcoming person waiting to greet me in most of the restaurants and the stores. So I'm starting to love Buffalo. I've been rooting for Buffalo for a while. I've been on this Josh Allen guy for a while as far as just a fan. You know, being in this celebrity game, Collectible Exchange, and having dealt with literally thousands of athletes in my 40-year career, 50 million autographs, I think it says a lot about somebody when they have a high level of fame. I've seen guys go from, you know, 0 to 100 quick and all that, but you gotta love the way this guy handles himself. And I know Buffalo doesn't take it for granted. I just wish that people around the country, you know, when you get a stud like this, who's not only a great player, but even a better person off the field. Like, I just value the hell out of that. Like, I just really admire people that can, that realize that their success isn't about him. And he's everything about that. He goes about his job, loves the fans, connects with people that need help, knows he can make an impact. Like, that's what life's all about. And a lot of players miss that.
In your work with athletes over the years, and we'll dig deep into this, did you consider it part of your role to help tutor some of these athletes through some of those choices and how they interact with people, how they connect with fans? Did you ever get into that, or was the athlete
the
athlete?
Every player I have, I try to. And, you know, some listen, most don't. I think Mariano Rivera is probably one of my best. You know, now he doesn't listen to me. He's unanimous. He's the big dog. And has earned it. But, you know, for a long time when he first came over from Panama, I really did everything I told him. A lot of good ideas and directions I took him in, I think, worked well for him. And he took it to even another level himself personally, which I give him a lot of credit for. But, you know, Oswaldo Cabrera is one of my players that I'm really so excited about. Even though he's not the biggest name yet, I mentor him every day and he listens. And obviously, I'm not one of those great athletes who hurt his knee and all of a sudden that's why I'm not playing. Like, I never had a shot of playing anything other than, like, you know, a schoolyard ball, you know, whatever. So it's not like I'm this frustrated athlete. I mean, I was always like, I love business, love entrepreneurship. Most people are not great learners. And one of the reasons why a lot of people are miserable is because they just aren't growing. And in order to grow, you have to listen and learn and want to be curious. And when you start telling an athlete who everybody's kissing their ass all day what to do and what not to do, sometimes it's oil and vinegar, you know, it just doesn't go. But it's my business. I'm grateful to be in it, to be able to work with some of the greatest players ever. And whether they listen to me or not is not what's ringing the cash register for me. Every now and then when they do listen, we definitely make a lot more money. And I always ask them, I say, do you like money? And would you like to make more? Well, let's not chase the money, chase the things that make the money. It's one of my favorite lines, like, don't chase the money, chase the things that make the money, which is doing the right thing on purpose, doing the little things, the follow-ups, treat everyone great, be respectful, have a high level of empathy, and use the help, which I tell people all the time, it's okay to get help. Everything's fixable, I think. And that's more, I mean, we've gone on to the Living on Purpose book now. But
yeah, I was going to ask you about it.
I did a speech yesterday for this group, and it was a little bit of an older group, and I was just like, dreaming is okay for everyone, not just young people. And I think the older people that can dream, they're the ones who can do the most damage. They're the highest level of entrepreneurs. Most people think entrepreneurism is for young people. You think about the experience, you have a little more tolerance for risk. You got the money. I mean, 70% of the wealth in this country is with people 60 and older. So, you know, just you do the math. Like, I love older entrepreneurs, even though maybe we can't get an app as quick and maybe we can't find things on Google as quick as some of the young ones. But I always tell the young ones, don't forget who invented the internet, who invented the iPhone, who invented a driverless car. It's all older people, cell phones, everything. You know, young ones think we're just a bunch of idiots, but like, we're the ones who invented all this stuff that you think made you so smart. Now, I like the young ones. I'm a lot more excited about this young Generation Z than a lot of my friends and counterparts are, because they can get stuff done quick and they are able to really navigate quickly. And with that, with a little energy, they could be a really dangerous group that maybe can help us and take care of some of the issues that some of my baby boomer generation is going to be leaving them behind. They're really good on social media. They know how to do a lot more stuff with content, videos, and I'm very big. If you go follow me on social, you know, I'm posting every day multiple times. Not a typical 66-year-old.
No, I see all the time. I saw a great LinkedIn post today.
I don't screw around. I mean, I want to communicate with people that I love and communicate with my fan base and customers. I want them to know what I'm thinking, and I also want to know what they're thinking. I can't believe how many CEOs like don't even look at the comments, don't look at the feedback. I love it. How generous is when somebody comes on my social and bitches at me? How generous you took the time to do it. It's my choice whether I believe it, want to listen to it, but most of it's pretty good. And, you know, I always say the truth will set you free. Piss you off first. So anyway, I'm sorry. We got off on a tangent.
No. When you say the feedback's good, do you mean good as in helpful or good as in positive?
No, good and helpful. Like, listen, you don't learn anything from winning. That's how you learn. You really get a nice view of what's really going on in your company, especially as your company like mine right now, Collectible Exchange, is growing rapidly. And when you're growing rapidly, which is what the name of the game is, you know, you're prone, you're vulnerable to maybe make a couple mistakes and or maybe you're missing something that people are looking for. I am all about it. You would see me often at Yankee Stadium in front of my store, shaking hands, signing books. I can't get out there and meet enough people. You know, if you really want to have some happiness in the business you're in, you've got to be chasing growth, and you chase growth with curiosity and enthusiasm.
On that note, right before we turned on the mics and started recording, you told me that your book, Living on Purpose, or you said you hope that Living on Purpose is something that every person in their 40s can read, and that's me. And when I bought it, I kind of had that impression. I'm like, this looks like the right book for me right now. It's stories about faith, fortune, and fitness that will lead you to an extraordinary life. So talk about, why, I mean, you're thinking of Gen X and young or older millennials there. What is it about people in their 40s and the message you've got?
You know, you spend a lot of time figuring out when you were really, really young, whether you realize or not, how to walk, finally how to talk. Then you figured out, you know, how to get into this school, that school, how to play on that team or this team, the travel team. Then you were trying to figure out how to get into the right high school. God knows the effort you put into getting into college. And then God knows the effort you put into getting your first job. Think about how hard that was. And then getting your career going. You went to trade shows. You did all this kind of learning to be good at your craft. Hopefully you put a lot of training in to be great at your craft. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you're 45 and you've been doing that for 20, 25 years. But you don't have a plan what to do after you've been really successful. I tell people all the time, it's like people say, Brandon, did you ever think you're going to be this successful? I'm like, yeah. I was dirt poor, welfare, the whole thing as a kid. But I was like, I knew one day I was going to start a company and it was going to be great. I didn't know what it was going to be. So when people say, do you ever think your company was going to be this successful? I'm like, no, you think I started this company to be a loser and a failure? I'm going to try everything I can to win. Yeah. What people don't realize is that they have no plan after they succeed and get to a high level of success. And then, by the way, you probably killed yourself, so you're probably a little lacking on the parenting end. And God knows the most important thing is, you know, how's your health? When I coach somebody, you know, I'll say on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you in the parenting? How are you with health? How are you with your friends? How are you in business? And I get to, 9 or 10 in business, 5 or 6 in health, you know, 6 or 7 with the kids. I'm like, my kids told me that I was a 6, maybe a 7. I wanted to go and jump into a river after it snowed. And why do you work so hard? Well, I do it for my family. I do it for my wife. I do it for my husband. Then my wife is like, well, you're like a 6 or 7. I'm like, really? So you do everything you can to be a moderate, mediocre partner.
Right.
And that's why I wrote the book. And the other thing is there was a review. I always tell people, please read my book and make sure you put a review. Because I learn.
Right.
And I read them all. So this one guy said, my second book was You Gotta Have Balls, the most popular book. And it was about how I built Steiner Sports. I'm not at Steiner. I'm at Collectible Exchange. Just a little side note. This guy's like, Steiner. What a great book. You got to have balls. And it is a great book. But he's like, how convenient everything fell into place for you. It was all true, but I neglected to put some of the stuff that when I got off course. And I kind of didn't talk about some of the dumb stuff that I did and some of the mistakes and some of the idiotic things that maybe, you know, the heartache. So when you read Living on Purpose, my family was not happy about this book because I was extremely transparent about how I felt and where I was at. And I love the line, like my friends would call me. I'd say, you know, when do you want to get together? I'd say, how's never? Is never good? Like, I don't have time. I mean, for my friends, I'm like, and you all know what I'm talking about. When you got kids, you got the business, you got all this stuff going on. And it's sad that I'd be in that mindset, but I was kind of driven on the business. And I just thought there's some really good stuff on the recovery of how I recovered from this idiotic behavior to become rich and successful in one area and then poor as all hell in these other funnels. And then I figured out a system. I had done 250 pods, maybe more. And that was my way of luring all these experts on to my program to learn. So I go into a bookstore and I'd say, tell me, I want to lose weight. Who's the best author on weight loss? And then I call the guy up and say, you probably don't have a big sports following, but I do. Would you come on my pod or would you like to come stay at my house? I'll take you to a Yankee game. So I went to like guys like John Gray. I went to the sleep doctor, Michael Bruce, Harvey McKay, all these gurus on life, mental mindset, everything else, and retooled. Changing my flock, made new friends, which I think is critical. I talked to 45, 50-year-olds. Like, when was the last time you made a new friend? When was the last time you made a new
friend?
Oh,
you're asking me.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good
point.
When was the
last time you found a new band that you liked? But at the end of the day, when was the last time you did something for the first time? Because is there any more joy in doing something for the first time? No.
Right.
But we stopped doing it. And then what's your favorite thing? And why wouldn't you do your favorite thing as much as freaking possible? Eat your favorite food, go to your favorite place, do your favorite thing. And you talk to 40-something-year-olds in between the kids that work. Yeah, you know, it's been a while since I did that. Like, really? And you can see where the whole thing comes together. And I feel like I really put it together in a really simplistic way to say it doesn't have to go down that way. And that's what the book is, man. And I'm very grateful because some of these ideas that are in the book obviously are from really, really smart people that I went and researched. And again, back to what I was saying, curiosity, growth with enthusiasm brings you some happiness. And helping others, well, that's a joy.
So what are you working on now in your life?
It's a good question. I'm in a tweener state. You know, I started this new company, Collectible Exchange, and I was just trying it. I'm not a tech person, but you know, all of a sudden it's now blowing up. It's gotten really big. I'm taking Highmark Stadium down. I just signed Air Force, Syracuse, St. John's, Michigan. So I have all these Savannah Bananas. I take, you know, Live Golf, XFL. And then, you know, we take people's collections and we help vault them and sell. So when people are downsizing or someone should die and they have cards, collectibles, Collectible Exchange will take your stuff in, show you what you have, help you get it authenticated, value it, and help you sell it. And a lot of older people struggle with that, and it's a one-stop shop. It's been going incredibly well. So I'm caught between a rock and a hard place now. I'm not working for money. So a lot of this money, in my mind, I'm for charity and help good causes. So I'm a little motivated on that, but I'm trying to find my way. I don't have a lot of hobbies, and I'm struggling. I'm trying to figure out, like, can I be a golfer? You know, 20 lessons in, I still suck. I know it's a hard sport, but, like, it's definitely not easy peasy. I'm definitely traveling around the world with my wife. My wife, I mean, I'm trying to find the travel agent that lives in my house somewhere secretly. Because the amount of trips that we have gone on or are going on, I know my wife's got to be getting some insight somewhere. You know, we're going to Japan in a couple of months. We're going to Bahamas next week. We're going to Poland in June. Trying to diversify a little bit of what I do with my personal time, a little less business. Trying to delegate out. Building my company very similar to how I built Steiner Sports, except the same kind of passion, the same kind of love and connection to the product and the customers, except building a much stronger management team in a more of a partnership way so that my people feel ownership and they can take on more of the responsibility. It's not all on me. I've changed my management style. You know, I'm leading with a lot more love and kindness. A lot easier going now with my younger staff, especially because I really love the younger kids around me with some aspects, but then some of the stuff that's kind of old school. Oh, you take your pen, you write a little note, and you say thank you to the customer. You can actually do that on a piece of paper.
Right.
No, don't thank them in an email. Thank them in a note. Put that in the box. Put a stamp on it. Like, that's how it works. So, you know, I'm very patient about these processes. I think these little things are really important. I'm still a believer of some of the old school. Like, I pick up the phone. Well, why are you calling me? I'm like, well, I had something I want to ask you. Well, we didn't set up an appointment to talk. I'm like, no, I didn't, and I'm not going to. So, but a lot of younger people think that in order to talk on the phone, there should be an appointment only. Like, we really can't talk, huh? Oh, boy. But, you know, as the way the world has changed, I'm trying to be a little bit, you know, I would say it's not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the flexible.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. Yeah, I often think about, too, with younger people who have certain habits built in for understandable reasons, there's always that tug and pull, should they adapt to, you know, any of us who might have grown up without cell phones, I think is probably a good dividing line. If we had analog childhoods or analog young adulthoods, some of those early habits are still there. Yes, you can pick up a phone. Yes, you can write a note. You can send something in the mail. People will open it too because they don't get that much.
There's
in the
no
mail,
app
right?
for having a little more heart. There's no app for having more resilience. So we can't get completely numb to all this. And also have a 5-to-1 rule where before I ever get on your ass about something, I'm gonna have told you 5 great things you've done. I'm walking around my office trying to find what's good. Like, my favorite words, yes, that's what I'm talking about. I love what you just did there. Like, that's more of my starting point as opposed to walking around finding everything that's wrong, which is kind of a little bit how I used to manage, to be honest with you. So I felt that's my job. If I don't spot all the things that are going wrong, who else is gonna? Now I'm like walking around trying to find what's right and emphasizing it and really overplaying it. And then at some point, after I've given you enough positive feedback and told you all the great things you've done, once in a while, if need be, I can, by the way, teachable moment. And one of my rules of thumb, just real quickly, is every morning when I wake up, I try to think of everybody that made yesterday possible. And I want to send some level of gratitude to them in some way, whether it's a thank you card, a note, a text, whatever it is.
You're making me think of a great book by A.J. Jacobs, and it's about coffee. He gets a cup of coffee every morning in New York City and wrote a book about tracking down and thanking every single person, or at least somebody from every single group that was responsible for what was in his hand. Incredible, incredible book. I want to ask you, so speaking of gratitude and teams and the work you're doing, taking Highmark Stadium, tell me about the team of people, and I know you're leading it, but the team of people you have working with you to walk in that stadium and essentially take it apart, memorialize it, and sell it to fans who love that stadium or the Buffalo Bills so much.
It starts with, you know, I got to get into becoming the ultimate Buffalo Bills fan. I got to make believe I am Bills Mafia. But that's where my head's at. Like, I've watched every Bills game this year, rooting. I generally don't sit there and watch a full football game. I've been to Buffalo 5-6 times. I've talked to more Buffalo Bill fans. Like, I need to put myself in their shoes to really understand. And really, if you really want to get to the best product mix, how you want to deliver it, then you got to put yourself in a Buffalo Bills fan's shoes, somebody who lives up here, who's living and dying with this team, as many people do, and then hope maybe you can get there. I get into it. Like, when I'm representing a player, I'm doing the market for him, I'm making believe I'm pitching tomorrow night, even though there's no shot that's happening. But you really have to get into a high level of empathy, getting yourself in the other person's shoes. Right. So before we get into that, like, that's kind of what my mindset is. I'm trying to become an expert on being a Buffalo Bills fan. And when you see the products we're creating, I mean, I'm waking up in the morning like, maybe I just went to a Buffalo Bills game at Highmark. And now I'm sitting with a whole bunch of ideas. Like, you got to kind of like relive the whole thing. Like, I'm in the stands. Like, wow, I'd love to have that. I'd love to have this. We should make that. I'm watching more Buffalo Bill videos from fans. I'm on probably at least 20, 25 influencers. I'm watching everything that's going on. I'm watching the news because there's a big responsibility. I'm not doing this for the money. I have a company that has a responsibility to make money, but my first and foremost purpose and goal here is, like, I need to make a lot of people upstate New York here feel good about leaving that stadium and knowing they have a piece. Even though you think you're an expert, and I've done a lot of this, I took Yankee Stadium down and the Cowboys Stadium, that doesn't matter up here. I'll use it as a reference point, but that's not the core. What are we doing here? What am I doing uniquely up here? That's fans are going to go, wow. I want to be able to walk up here, run at the fans, and go, Brant, thank you. Wow, love what you did. Have a bunch of your stuff, man. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to remember that place that's so important to me. And my biggest fear is that I don't get it done on a high enough level because, you know, the expectation up here is high. That stadium is really important. Maybe the most important stadium I've done as far as the relationship with the fan, like, and that includes Yankee Stadium and the Meadowlands and Madison Square Garden. I go on, but I don't know if any of those stadiums match up to this level.
It's interesting to hear you say that too, because I know you started in this part of your work was the first stadium that
Syracuse.
You took apart. Oh, was it Syracuse, not Yankee?
Well, first of all, you know, I went to Syracuse, and it's funny. Right. I was there for the last game at Archibald and for the first game of the Dome when I went to school there. So, you know, I saw that whole transition. But yeah, listen, my business really started more with the Giants, because I was friendly with Lawrence Taylor and a bunch of guys on the A6 team. Otis Anderson was a guy, one of my first guys I represented, fortunately, from that Super Bowl MVP. So that was a big break for me in my career. But, you know, the Yankees was my coming out party. You know, obviously, you know, you're in New York, and to have a Derek Jeter and a Mariano and almost the whole team, Joe Torre, you name them, for them to get on 6 out of 8 World Series, who could write that? You can't even make that up.
Right.
And then to have, like, you know, 2/3 of the team under contract and then a partnership with the Yankees, I mean, that's pretty damn lucky. So, you know, quite a bit of learning, and, you know, it's a big organization over there in the Bronx.
When you think back to taking apart Yankee Stadium and selling that, and you're doing it now with Highmark Stadium and the Buffalo Bills, it might be apples and oranges comparison, but how does it match up, like, that fan passion – the people in Buffalo are connected to and have for the Bills. How do you think of that in, you know, in contrast to the passion that Yankees fans have for the team and for that that original stadium?
Similar. The level of importance the stadium has to fans in this area, a little higher importance. But, you know, when you have a stadium like the Yankees, the moments somehow mounted when you think about the great things that happened in that stadium and some of the greatness, the championships, the players, you know, when you think about it. And then it happened at a time when, you know, you had some really big names in the stadium, like a Mariano and a Jeter. If the Bills had won two or three Super Bowls, you know, we have an even a higher level conversation. But I think people look at this place, Highmark Stadium, as their second home. You know, where the, you know, those experiences and those memories just go wide and far deeper than just what's going on the field. It's the whole section. It's the parking lot. With the Yankees, it's more about those memories. Were you at the no-hitter? Were you at the perfect game? Were you at the championship? Although there were some magical moments on Highmark, without a doubt, I think both of those stadiums are right up there on the top of the list. Like, nobody cried about Madison Square Garden going down. If you've ever been to the old Cowboy Stadium, nobody gave a hoot about that.
Right.
The Islanders, I took that building down. I mean, they couldn't have blown that up fast enough. The Nassau Coliseum, that was terrible. So, you know, Giant Stadium was not much better. And it was also a very weird takedown, even though I was proud to do it. The Jets and Giants shared it, and it was just weird. Out of all the takedowns, that was the one I probably have failed the most. Didn't get my arms around it. The whole fan base was split up. The whole stadium didn't match the whole Jet thing. I don't think I really did a good job with the Giant Stadium. It was just get that thing out of the way, sell some stuff, and that's unusual for me, but I just couldn't get my arms wrapped around it.
What does success with the Bills Stadium look like? How do you measure the success?
You know, the county has been extremely generous and given me this opportunity. I'm very grateful. And it's very clear.
The stadium's owned by the county.
Yes, and it's very clear, you know, from the county, their directives is, we trust you, but please make as much money as you can. We have a bunch of projects on the table that we want to be able to do. And the county execs, and they were very intense and impactful about this. So this is not just whatever happens, happens. Like, Brandon, we trust you. We know what you're doing. And we're hoping you're going to come to the county with a big check. And I have every intention of doing so. But winning is, how do I break this thing down in a way so that every fan can find a price point, can fill some of their house and their man and women caves with something? It's coming up with something that no other stadium has done. We had come up with one idea the other day we're working on that could be different. We've never done that for any other stadium, for people to have a remembrance. I haven't come up with that specific idea. I have a couple really, really good ideas that would be very unique, and I think the fans are going to like them. Remember, we haven't announced everything yet, and we will keep announcing from this point on every few weeks or every month. There'll be new products added on to this Highmark Stadium collection all the way through the fall. At the Yankee Stadium, it sounds great, but crazy. But we lifted the grass up. It was grass.
Right.
And we lifted the field up and we freeze dried it, thousands of pieces. So people have a piece of the field from the last game. That was kind of like one of my things. And that's really where the dirt came in. As a sidebar, go to YouTube, Brandon Steiner, Syracuse TED Talk, if you want to get the whole story on the bricks and the dirt. So that was the big thing, that the Yankee takedown was the bricks, the dirt, the grass. Now, every time I go to Highmark, and I have a pretty good photographic memory, I'm looking all over the stadium, and these ideas keep popping up. It's going to be pretty exclusive and inclusive. I'm not going to go too far in a way where it's going to be all over the place. You'll know where to get it. I'm definitely finding a couple really cool partners here locally in Buffalo to help me with distribution, and I'm hoping that will be enough.
Anybody who's been to that stadium has seen the Wall of Fame, where you've got, you know, Jim Kelly, Mark yes. Levy, Bruce Smith, O.J. Simpson, all, you know, affixed to the wall. Are you able to pull those letters off and do something with those?
I am, but the Bills, they sent out a note to all those players asking to get first right if they wanted them. You know, when you look at it logically, I guess I understand that. I mean, if I was Jim Kelly, it'd be nice to have that, you know, in my own sports bar. Maybe we're not selling that. Pretty much everything else is pretty much, you know, I think in our grasp as far as being able to convert that into gifts.
Also, before we started talking on the, you know, on air today, you and I were joking a little bit about the urinal trough.
Yes.
And for people who aren't familiar, the men's rooms, at least some of them at Highmark Stadium, were well known for, rather than having urinals, having a trough that the men would use. It sounds like there's a lot of interest in people. I didn't even realize the thing was still there.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been in a press box, admittedly, for a long time. Yeah.
Well, the Big Cat, you know, his podcast, Part of My Take. I mean, these guys are on fire and loving them. I'm grateful that they're talking about this and mentioning me on the air. So I'm very grateful. But we have a trough reserved for the Big Cat. But I got to tell you, this guy is an influencer. He's a disruptor because he's been talking about this. I hope we have enough troughs to fulfill the demand because everyone is calling for these damn troughs and urinals. And tomorrow, I didn't spend a lot of time in the bathrooms in my walkthroughs, to be honest with you. I did go in a few because I'm that crazy and weird. So I made a point to go in the bathroom to see what was in there. And so I had it on my mind that maybe we'd do something with some of the urinals and troughs. It wasn't completely out of left field, but it wasn't like a highlight. Now, like, it'll be a focal point tomorrow to go see how many of those are there and what's involved with removing them and are they sellable? How's that going to feel and look? But the demand, the calls, my phone's blowing up. It's crazy.
Not as glamorous, I wouldn't think, as a piece of turf or you're doing these with cool pencil cup holders with the goalposts. Yeah. But hey, people love Buffalo.
I love the light fixtures on the top of the stadium. You know how big those things are? Like, I want one of those for my living room. Like little things like that, the flagpole and the flags, and you have all the different teams up top. I'm looking forward to selling those. I'm excited about a lot of those little things. It doesn't light the lamp as far as crazy amounts of money you make, but somebody's going to have that, and it's going to be cool. The big buffalo in the middle of the field, like somebody's going to get that.
Oh, somebody will love that.
It's freaking cool.
Do you know yet where the players' lockers are going?
It's a hot topic. There's a couple visitors' lockers that we want, and I think we're going to get a few. And then the rest of them, I think, are going to the new stadium and auxiliary locker room. And then we're discussing the current locker room now as we speak. And we're going back and forth. I don't have a defined answer, but I'm hoping that a lot of the stools and some of the locker room stuff we'll get and some of the lockers we'll get. They're very, very – this is the thing people don't understand. The lockers, they're very, very big, and also they're connected. So if I had my locker next to yours, there's only one wall between it. So if I got my locker and you got yours, we'd be short a wall. So you got to refurbish those lockers. It's hard to match it all up. It's hard to get that all right. It's one of my missions tomorrow also is to figure that out. That will be in the auction we're doing at the end of April, along with a bunch of one-of-one stuff. And a couple of troughs will be in that auction, I guess, because we won't have enough troughs. We'll auction a couple off. There's a bunch of one-of-one stuff throughout the stadium, including the Bills logo in the middle and things like that. And that will be an auction we'll do at the end of April.
Before I let you go, I'm going to sneak in one decidedly non-sports question.
Sure, ask
me
anything.
Before anyone who knows your story knows you were in the food service industry before moving into sports, legend has it you invented the everything bagel. And if that legend is true, then I know a lot of people who are very grateful for you. Is it true?
It is true. I've been working since I'm 10 years old, and basically, I had a paper route when I was 12. You hear those stories, but I was one of those relentless kids. I wanted my paper route. I wanted to win this box of candy bars. So as I'm building up the route, you had to go get new people to sign up, and whoever did the most of each month, you win a box of candy bars. So finally, I got this woman to sign up with me because I would build her. I'd bring her milk and bagels. So as I'm delivering more milk and bagels, and you got to remember, in 1972. There were not a lot of bagel stores. Like, you're not getting bagels like every other corner. Like, this is a bagel factory, and there were very few of these around. And we would bake bagels in the morning, starting at 4 in the morning, and we'd deliver them to all the supermarkets. So every morning I come in to get the bagels, milk, and he says, you're a hardworking young man. Would you like to work for me? I'm like, well, I'm delivering the papers. Like, he goes, we start baking at 4 in the morning. You bake till 7:30, 3.5 hours, 4 days a week. And then you can go deliver your papers. I said, that's great. I can use the extra money. Show you the kind of mindset I had. And sure enough, I did that for about 3 months. I'm falling asleep in school. I'm 12 years old, 13 years old. Anybody out there, if you have a 10, 12, 13-year-old, getting them up to get dressed and go to school is monumental. I'm getting up on my own at 4 in the morning to work and then go deliver a paper route and then going to school with no parental supervision. Anyway, I go to quit, and the guy says, look, I have the night job open. In the morning, we're baking thousands of bagels in this factory. And I'm making them, baking them. He showed me, you know, all that stuff. And now I'm baking at night. I take the job at night. little easier, and I got a pay raise, and I just got bored. So I'm screwing around with all these different seasonings, you know, poppy and salt, and I'm squishing it down and putting onions on there. And there's a lot of bagels that got invented after me, like cinnamon raisin, and you see all these different variations. But at the time, I was screwing around with all these, you know, bagel braids and squishing the bagels down and making a special. My mom loved onion, by the way, so I fooled around with all these onion variations. And then one day, I had all these seeds on the pan underneath what I was doing. And I said, we should just do everything. I just threw everything on the damn thing. And it took off. And that's how we got the Everything Bagel back in 1972 or 73-ish, you know, in that range when I was working at night there. There's a couple people that claim this claim about making the Everything Bagel, but it wasn't until like the 80s or 90s. I'm like, are you crazy?
You were ahead of that.
Oh, yeah, so far ahead of it. And also, like, the bagel place, I lived over a Glock Kosher Butcher store on Kings Highway, a very busy highway of retail stores and everything. And literally right downstairs was a Kosher Deli, Kosher Butcher, and the bagel store. And then across the street was a Carvel, literally within no more than 20 yards away from my apartment was all that. So I literally went down around the corner. I'd get a bagel, 5 cents was what a bagel cost back then. And I never ate anything, any kind of sandwich, other than on a bagel. I mean, I didn't even know that you could have a sandwich on a bunch of Wonder White Bread or anything like that. Everything was on a bagel.
I would love that. That's
The bagel store was right downstairs, you know. It was one of the few bagel factories that, you know, that we knew of. So that's how the bagel story comes around. That's in the purpose book, right? I hope if you're out there, you're going. I just launched my fourth book, which is the Ride Alongs, which is a year I spent with the NYPD, and we did a ride along up in Syracuse because everything I found out to be in New York is going on in every city, probably including Buffalo and all over the country. We have a very serious problem with a lot of hopelessness, a lot of domestic violence, a lot of bad interaction between neighborhoods and police, and we need to be safe. I do a lot of work with the NYPD. I've redone about 5 police stations. When a police officer dies, they give me a call, and I go in, I fix it up, you know, the muster room, the conference room, the locker room, and take the whole precinct to a Yankee game in honor of the police officers that fall in the line of duty. So when I had an opportunity, I was doing a speech for the top 900 police management officers. I asked the commissioner if I could do this ride-along, and I wanted carte blanche to go anywhere. And if you read this book, if you're interested in your safety, because the crime's coming up towards you, it's just a matter of time. We're not as safe as we should be and could be. And when you go around to other countries around the world, it's incredible how much more safer they are on a day-to-day basis. We could be safer, and we should be doing more for some of the people that are in these neighborhoods. I think the confusion is people think that the people in those neighborhoods that are really poverty-stricken, they want more help, but what they really want is investment.
Right.
And they want us to stop dumping their homeless shelters and allowing gangs and certain crime to exist. They don't want that, and it's a small amount of people that ruin it for a lot of people in some of those neighborhoods. I hope you take the journey with me. I mean, the Purpose book is a great journey, and the ride-alongs is it's like you're flying somewhere, you read that book, and you'll get off the plane, you'll be finished with it. It's a very quick read, and you'll understand how freaking dangerous, how crazy I was to do this book. This is one of the stupider things I did. My wife was not happy. I learned a lot. I'm glad it's behind me, and if I had a chance to do it over again, I wouldn't.
You would not? Interesting.
But there's a lot that the people in these neighborhoods are going through as well. And the pancake is flat. It's a flat situation, the safety that's going on in this country, but it has two sides. And the people that are in these neighborhoods, they're acting a little out of whack. Sometimes we see on TV, there's a reason for it. And I hope you give this book a read. The Living on Purpose is a great Father's Day gift for your dad. It's really a great gift for women to give to their husbands. If you really want to be a better husband, to be honest with you, you know, women are the superior species, and they generally do more of the right thing than men. I'll say that.
I'm with you on that.
You know, I mean, there's no way we're ever doing what a woman does in a day what we do. No, we just don't get it. But we're open to it, and we're trying really hard. But I think this is a great book. I've given to a lot of my friends and say, hey, you know, something. You don't have to be an okay husband. Like, you can turn up. You can turn it up. And this book gives you the blueprint to do it. It doesn't, again, tell you what to do, but it shows you how you can definitely increase your level of impact in your marriage or with your kids, that kind of thing, without it being too dramatic.
Well, I'm excited to read. Well, read both.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you being here to talk. Talk about all of this, the books, the stadium, collectibles exchange.
You know, I just want to say thank you to all the people in Buffalo, and particularly thank you to the county, and thank you to the Bills, you know, for giving me this opportunity. I don't take it lightly. Matter of fact, the opposite. And I hope I don't let you down. I hope you can enjoy these things I'm putting together. I know that there's a lot of money grabbing going on out there, but that's not what's going on here. There's a lot of work and a lot of thought, a lot of meetings and a lot of back and forth between the Bills and us, and trying to figure out the best way to go. And also Legends Global, who, you know, you do the web and the store there. So having that distribution support has been a really nice marriage. Definitely go and follow me on Instagram or Twitter or LinkedIn. And hey, if there's something you think I should be doing better or different, well, you have an idea, I love hearing it. I listen, I respond to it all. And thanks for having me on. This is like our second
we've chatted before, but it's good to have you in the studio. So Brandon Steiner, thanks so much. And we'll be right back.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the #4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. More snowmaking, more lifts, more ways to play. Holiday Valley is a mix of exciting terrain on an independent mountain that brings out your best. From the first chair to the last run, Holiday Valley is what winter was made for. Holiday Valley, your winter done right. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Tim, thanks for taking the reins on the interview. It was great.
I can do it again sometime,
absolutely.
Even if you're on a plane.
No, that was great. No,
that was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, John, because I know you're a big collector, though. I really would have loved to have you in on that conversation. I know you've got quite a bit of memorabilia from over the years.
Well, in the memorabilia I have, I'm not a big collector. I don't seek out collectible items. I don't, you know, but I do have memorabilia with teams or events that I've been a part of. And, you know, each of those is, you know, there's a story behind them, right? I want to commend Brandon and his company for what they've done, because they've actually created a whole new category. I mean, this really, really did not exist 20 years ago.
Not at all.
You know, he's created a whole category. And I think what's great for the fans in Western New York is there's something accessible for all fans at all price levels, you know. So keeping it open, keeping it an option, and just making sure the fans that have spent so much real money and emotional equity in that building have a chance for a keepsake, you know, and the more the merrier.
Well, and it's interesting to see how creative Brandon and his team get with this. And we talked about it in the interview, but turning the field goal posts into pencil cups, which sold out quick. I was going to buy one of those, by the way. Can't. They sold out. But different things you can do with the seats. The, you know, of course, the urinal troughs, which
I'm not sure that would get approved at my household, but maybe yours.
Oh, I'm not even going to ask. Won't fit in the door. Can't do it. No. You know, I think walking around a stadium like that with him and just seeing his eye for taking even just a sign. You know, a sign on the wall and framing it with something else. That's the way his mind works. It's not just how many seats are there, how can we tear them out, box them up, sell them, ship them. There is some of that, you know, and hologramming it for the, you know, to verify the authenticity. There's all of those things.
Right.
But it's also like, what can we piece together that can be a memory on somebody's wall?
Right. So what memorabilia do you have? What does your fan cave look like?
So crazy. I don't. It's an office at home.
Okay.
And I don't have a lot. It's like you. I, you know, as a journalist, I've been a part of a lot of events. So you can imagine the number one thing I have is a massive box of press passes. A grandson that one day those will be his.
Right.
So I've got a lot of those. I've got, you know, a really cool one is when I was a kid, I was at one of the final baseball games of the year. I think the season closing game. For the Buffalo Bisons, and the player, I'll be interested to see if you remember him, former major league player named Orestes Destrada.
No, that doesn't, you stumped me. That does not ring a bell.
Yeah, so he played a couple years in the majors, had a good solid, you know, career at the AAA level. He handed me his bat, you know, and I was probably 12 years old, something like that. that bat to this day is in my home gym, and he's a big guy. It's a huge bat. To this day, I will swing it just as a workout. I don't know if that counts as memorabilia because it's certainly not on display. And a couple other items like that. Now, how about, and I have some jerseys from over the years too. Which my wife wears quite a bit. She's a school teacher, and if it's Show Your Colors Day, a Sabre jersey comes out, Team USA jersey. But I don't have much occasion to actually throw on a jersey. When you and I are doing Skin in the Game by Zoom, I see an LA Kings jersey right behind you.
So I know
you've got that.
So I was fortunate to be part of the team that designed and launched the whole new brand. So one of those original first run jerseys I have. You'll appreciate this, and those listeners from Northeast Ohio, there was a building, the old Cleveland Municipal Stadium. There were 80,000 seats in that building. I do have number 19 from the old stadium, signed by number 19, Bernie Kosar.
Nice.
So that was nice. Then, spent a lot of cold afternoons in that stadium. And then to your point, tickets from events. But here's the thing, and we have this conversation in the past with on Skin in the Game. Now that everything's digital and you have, your ticket on your phone, it's not the same as that hard stock, whether it's a World Series ticket from Cleveland from 2016 or it's an All-Star Game ticket, the hard stock. We've got to find a way that fans can still save that ticket stock, right? Or from even a concert, like you saw U2 or Pearl Jam one year, right? You need that ticket. That's some of the memorabilia that that I have at my place.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, going forward, what kind of tangible memorabilia teams put out there, and inevitably may sell, right?
Right.
Which is fine. It is part of the game. But I'm very curious to see as Highmark Stadium and future stadiums too that Brandon Steiner and his team are able to work with. How many different ways can you take apart a stadium, package it up, and sell it as a memory? And and what do you do to make it affordable at all price levels? At a glance, they are. I have to say that they really, and it's early. There's a lot more coming, but the seats are, it depends what you're buying, but a few hundred to several hundred dollars a seat back is a lot less. I'm not saying that's inexpensive. It is not. But on the other hand, if you want something that's you can put on display, you can utilize.
Right.
It's not the craziest purchase either.
Well, here's the crazy, and again, half of that revenue goes back to Erie County, who is the owner of the building. Wouldn't it be great, though, if those dollars then were put into local parks and local youth sports, right?
I thought you were going to say defray the cost of the $250 million Erie County's paying for the new stadium.
Well, that too. But
that would be, to your point, because that's a really good point.
From the business part of it, right?
Yeah, take that money, put it back into the community.
And by the way, Brandon and his company over the next, 3 years are going to be pretty busy. There's a new building going up in Tennessee. There is a new building going up in Cleveland. There's a new building that's in development in Washington, D.C. So there'll be plenty more seats and goalposts and turf to go around.
And I'm wondering if this would work in every city. I know it would in Cleveland. And,
yes.
And you know better than I would.
Yeah.
But, in Nashville, in Washington, are there enough fans who would want to pay enough money to buy enough memorabilia from those former stadiums to bring it home? I suspect the answer is yes.
Yeah, well, the other one you mentioned is, that I didn't mention, was Kansas City, Arrowhead.
Oh, I already know the answer to that.
I think Arrowhead, the connection that the fans have there in Kansas City is just as strong as the fans in Western New York. Tennessee doesn't have quite the legacy and the tradition as a Buffalo.
And a lot of transplants living in, living in Nashville.
But Kansas City, for sure.
Yeah.
Tim, thanks for bringing Brandon Steiner to the show. And with that, Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.